just became a raven.
Your art matters. It's what got me here.
Let's go. Ravens on three. 1, 2, 3,
Hello and welcome to the Ravens, a One Tree Hill podcast. I'm Simon and I love One Tree Hill.
And I'm Dom and I've seen 142 episodes of One Tree Hill.
And tonight's episode for debate is Season 7, Episode 12, Some Roads Lead Nowhere.
I'm Drew Barrymore, and you're listening to The Ravens Podcast with Simon and Dom.
So hello and welcome to The Ravens, a One Tree Hill podcast where it is always 10:30 at night, so it's time to grab the snacks from the sweet cupboard, move on upstairs and settle in as tonight's episode for debate is Season 7, Episode 12, Some Roads Lead Nowhere. Dom, we're here. When I see a mirror, all I want to do is cut a line on it and snort it. How are you, my friend?
I knew it. I'm good. We'll start off with an apology. Apologies for those that are listening and thinking there's something wrong with the sound quality. My microphone has stopped working. So, yes, it's not your ears. It's not the editing. It's my microphone. So apologies for that. Other than that, I'm absolutely fine. How are you, my very good friend Simon?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, these things happen. We have these blips with technology at times. What can you do? You tried, so that's all we can ask.
I tried several things, and it did not fix it. But never mind. I will have it fixed by next time. If not, I will burn Utica to the ground.
If you touch one hair on Stanley's head, we will burn Utica to the ground. So Dom has watched The Office so many times. Will you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Will you actually tally it? Like, I want a tally. I want you to sit and like actually think about it and work out exactly how many times you've watched it so far. I then want you to write that down, and I then want you to keep a tally, because you're getting into impressive numbers here.
So this rewatch is number 8.
Okay, so write that down. I need it written. I need you just literally, like, as if you're in prison, just like do like an old school, you know, when you get to 5, you put the diagonal cross through.
You want to do tally that? I can do that now.
Yeah.
I can do that
do
now.
It.
Do it. Sorry. So I'll put, do you want me to write Office Rewatch? Office.
Yeah, but I want you to tally it like how I said, the old school way. You rewatch. Know, blocks of 5, get the diagonal. On all 8, have you watched all the way through? You're not like skipping Christmas episodes or anything? You're doing the whole thing?
I watched them all, yeah. I watched the whole lot. So
including season 1.
You know when I... Yeah. I watched season 1's only like 6 episodes or whatever, so it takes like 2 minutes. But you know, when I messaged you yesterday,
yes,
I messaged you your favorite line from the whole thing. So this is where we're up to. So the last time I messaged you, that was at the end of February. From the end of February, I then finished. So that is it. That's at the end of season 7, right? So that's season 7, episode 25, I think it is 25/26, because it's like a double episode, because it's when Michael has left and they're picking a new manager, and that's the whole point of it. So I then have to watch season 8, season 9, and then I immediately started rewatching again, almost immediately, maybe like a week's gap, shall we say. So since probably the beginning of March, I've rewatched to this point. So yesterday I messaged you, it's quite embarrassing really, I messaged you the line, which is, shut up about the sun. Stop talking about the sun. Like, he gets really upset. Shut up about the sun. Shut up about the sun. Because, you know, Gabe is just an absolute lunatic. Since yesterday, so that's season 7, episode 25. Let's call it 25. What episode am I on currently?
Oh, my God. If it's anything beyond... In a day. If it's anything beyond episode 8 of season 8, there's an issue.
I am I'm on season 8, episode 22.
Fucking hell.
Bear in mind that I've been incredibly busy at work, and I've watched One Tree Hill, and I've watched Prison Break in that time as well.
You really, like, I want to know, is there a feature, I don't know if there is, where you can, like, see your Netflix, Disney Plus, whatever usage, like, over the year? Because I know that you have it on in the background. It's not like you're sat watching it doing nothing, like you're working and doing other things. But I mean, yeah, I find it hard. On a Wednesday, I'll watch One Tree Hill and I'll watch, at the moment we're doing Prison Break, right? So I'll watch both, and it's a struggle. Like, I finish with like 2 minutes before we're about to start, and I'm watching while washing up and cooking and whatever. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm jealous, I think.
So sometimes in my work day, if I'm on a shift, if I'm on a customer care shift, we have like quiet periods, like moments where it just suddenly, like, we're all on a shift call together, but nobody's really talking. And because no one's talking, I can have something else on, like listen to something else. Even when they are talking, I have it on as well. And I tend to be able to cope with both. Sets of things, especially if they're not talking to me, because then I'm like, I'm not engaged with it at all. I can just crack on and do what I need to do. But yeah, it's just on. I just have it on. It's just comforting, and it is like having colleagues with you. So there's a lot of time where I'm working on my own and I'm not on a call with someone. So yeah, it's nice to kind of have that background.
You're in Dunder Mifflin, basically. You work at Dunder Mifflin.
That's my office.
I have two questions then. One, do you feel like in an ideal world, you'd never not work at home again? Like, as in, you love working from home, you want to work from home forever. I work from home too, and I love it. Is that, you're solely in this camp now?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I'd be, yeah, it wouldn't be the same, I think, having to now go work at another place. I wouldn't mind too much if it was like, okay, you have to go into an office like once a week. I would be able to cope with that, but I'd rather not.
Taking my belt off, it's cutting into me. Oh, that feels much better. Yes, no, I feel you. I mean, I wouldn't even want to go into the office once a week. I've been working at home now for 8 years. In July, it will be 8 years.
Wow.
It's a long time. I mean, I do see people and stuff, but like, I go and see people, but I feel you. Okay, and my second question was, what does your girlfriend think about this? Because she doesn't watch it, does she? Like, have you ever tried to get her to watch it? Is she aware that you've watched it 8 times all the way through?
Yes, and she thinks it's an illness. I've said she should watch it, like, just like bear with the first season, and then when you're in the second season, you'll see how kind of great it is, how funny it is, how silly it is, and stuff. And she's just, she doesn't seem interested at all. But she knows that I like it. Like, there'll be moments where, let's say she's like, I'm going to go to the bathroom and have a shower or whatever. I'm like, okay, great. I'll just put it on, because there's no point in starting something new that I'm going to have to explain. Do you know what I mean? Whereas I can explain every single little thing that's happened in the office up to the point and beyond. So it's kind of like, there's no point in starting something new. There's no point in watching, you know, something different, or watching something that I know she wants to watch as well, whilst I'm kind of waiting for her. So I might as well just throw that on, because I don't really want to sit in silence and do nothing. And I don't want to, you know, kind of just be staring. I don't want to be flicking through Instagram, all that shit. I might as well just put that on, because that's going to, you know, at least be a distraction while she's busy doing something else. So I don't watch it when she's around, like when we're together, unless it's in those gaps, those like pockets, because there's nothing else to do.
I hear you. Dom, I don't know if this has been happening to you recently, but I've just been like sweating profusely. Like, as in, I've just been sweating so much. So I've been using a lot of towels, and as you would imagine, they're they're sweat towels.
Right.
I mean, even if it's a regular towel, by the time I finish with it, it's become a sweat towel because I've sweated with it. Have you been getting sweaty lately?
I mean, I went for a walk today and it was really sunny. You know, there's that like slight crisp chill in the morning. It was like 10 o'clock. It was still that crisp chill in the morning. So I thought, oh, it's quite nice. It's really sunny. It was in my hoodie, not this one, a different one. And I got really sweaty on the walk, but like kind of just sitting around in general. Is that what you mean? Like sort of sitting, not being that active?
No, I just mean that I've been using so many sweat towels and they're all on the floor. And what I could really do with is some people to come and collect them.
Well, we could hire some people to do that. Well,
there's no need, Dom. There's no need at all. Because we have a few new people that have joined at the sweat towel collector level.
Wait, I'm going to make myself extra sweaty now so that they have to pick up my sweat towels.
Well, that's what I'm saying, Dom. There's a backlog here. But thankfully, we've had a couple people join. We've actually, since we podcasted last week, we've had three new Ravens.
Wow.
Yes. Awesome. Would you like to hear about them and induct them?
I'd love to with my bad audio.
Well, let's start with someone that actually... born and raised in St. Albans. But not anymore. But enjoys some of the more niche references to living in and around this area. Enjoys the podcast. Also said that she's looking forward to hearing what we have to say about Lost. And that she's been a long-time pigeon... time to make the transition. Coming in at sweat towel collector, it's Penny.
Penny. Penny, Simon has been incredibly sweaty lately. I'm only sweaty when I go on walks. He's sweaty all the time. So there's a lot to do. There is a lot to do. He's sweating right now. He just said it. He's closed the window to stop moths getting in and daddy long legs is. Right? Yeah. So he's getting hot in the room that he's in. So there are sweat towels on the floor there. They're all over the gym. They're covered. They're everywhere. And we need more dedicated sweat towel collectors. And you know what, Penny? That's you. And Penny, listen up, because this is important as well. You're a St. Albans Raven. You just became a Raven.
You're basically saying Penny is an STA STC.
Torben's STC? Sweat towel collector.
But Dom, there's so many sweat towels.
So many. I mean, Penny's going to do a great job. And the sweat towel collectors that we've already got, they're doing okay. Penny's obviously going to come in and shake stuff up, but we could do it more.
I mean, I'm hoping that Penny and then this other person we're going to announce can make some changes. Maybe consider using a different laundry detergent, maybe a different fabric softener. Could the towels be softer? I think it's possible. I think reach for the moon, you might land amongst the stars, and I'm hoping that the person that's going to take us there, coming in at sweat towel collector, is Ryan.
Ryan, do you know what we really need? We really need something that's going to be extra absorbent. So if you can kind of figure that out as well, because the additional sweat coming from Simon, coming from the team, I'm going to create more sweat because, you know, I said I would. I'm committed to creating the sweat to keep you in the role. It's important to me, Ryan. It's important to Penny as well that you're there supporting her. So Ryan, welcome. You're not from St. Albans, but you're just as important. And you just become a Raven.
Now, Dom, if that wasn't enough.
What?
I mean, we're talking about these are Ravens that we've been inducting here. They are the people behind the scenes. They're not on the court. Okay, they're on the court picking up towels. And Ryan Penny, others, it's a decision you made. And hey, not everyone's LeBron James. Okay?
Not everyone.
There is only one. But we do have someone coming in at Varsity, Dom. You know when they're in at Varsity is because they want access to those watch-along recordings. We set the tiers that way on purpose. And they're coming in at Varsity. I don't even have a real name. I just have a screen name. I've asked for their real name, but they only just signed up today, I believe. So coming in at Varsity, their username, Seeking Out Friday.
Well, welcome. Seeking Out Friday, I don't think you understand how much of a gap we've had in our lineup for Varsity. It's been difficult. We thought all the positions were taken. We thought kind of the opportunity had gone. We thought the roster was full. We kind of hit that cap. We can't spend anymore. We're not going to be able to afford the players that we would absolutely, truly love to have here. But something's changed. We've managed to offload a player to another team. We're going to send them somewhere else. We might send them to the Bobcats because we don't need them anymore. We don't want them. We don't want them in our team. They're gone. They're history. They're old news. Because we have Seeking Out Friday. And you're available. And you're in. And we want you in because you're absolutely amazing at what you do. And you just became a Raven.
Thank you, Penny, Ryan, Seeking Out Friday, for joining the team and being part of it. It is really lovely because I think that at this point of the podcast, that as we're getting into this territory of seasons and episodes that people aren't such massive fans of, that I think we felt like people were probably more likely going to be jumping ship than joining it. So it is really nice to know that people are listening and people are still joining and people are still like catching up and listening to things, Dom, that we said like 4 years ago at this point, which is crazy, isn't it?
Anything could happen.
Well, it is crazy because we started when we were 32. And we're now 36, so it's like we started in our early 30s and we're heading into our late 30s. That is like even though it's a short period of time, there is a big difference in life, you know, and how you're viewed in society and how we view ourselves. I don't know. So yes, it's very humbling. So in all seriousness, thank you very much for signing up. We really appreciate it. To you three and for everybody that is on board with the Patreon, It means something that people think, hey, this is enjoyable enough that I'm going to give some money to it, is a real beautiful thing. So thank you very much.
And also the people that have stuck with us as well. Like we obviously we get people that drop off all the time, but we get people that have really stuck with us when, you know, we've had things happen in our lives and we've had to have gaps and recordings and all sorts and, you know, you've really supported us in such a kind and lovely way and kept the kind of spirit of the community that we've kind of built and tried to continue to build, kept it alive. And those of you that are on the Discord, you know, especially like kind of keeping each other going and all this other stuff that, you know, all this additional content that you're all putting in there and the different conversations that are happening, it's amazing. And I try and chime in every now and then, but I just get ignored, so I don't really say much anymore. But I read everything. I read an IMOG, everything. So
this is a complete fallacy that's in your mind.
Absolute truth. I will show you the evidence, sir.
It's not. There's like five of us that contribute. There's 50, more than 50 members on Discord. There's like five of us that speak. Me, Chuck, Jenna, Harrison sometimes.
Marine.
Marine, yeah. Shahar. No, actually, there's quite a lot of us. Sarah. There's quite a lot of us at all. But speaking of glorious ravens, let's let in Kara. Kara is joining the waiting room. Kara's audio has connected. Kara's video is not there. We'll keep talking while she works out her technical issues. And just as if it's by magic, Kara, you're back. I can actually say this time because I messed it up when Alicia was here and got all confused. But someone that has been in Coney Heath Football Club, Kara, what's happening?
How's That's it going? Right. Good. How are you guys?
We're good. We're very well, thank you. How have you been?
I've been all right.
It's been busy.
Been busy. Work has been challenging. So we're going to put that aside for an hour.
I'm going to drop that for an hour, talk One Tree Hill, and then maybe go back to it. Nice. You're standing. Have you got a standing desk?
I do. It goes up and down.
Nice.
I don't stand often, but I needed a little more energy today.
That's my next purchase is going to be a standing desk. I asked work for one, and it was like, maybe you can have one. So I'm just going to get one and then see if they'll pay me back. Yeah,
that's a good way to go. Yeah.
Yeah, it's quicker that way as well. Don't have to wait.
I don't know how you knew.
Well, one, she's not sitting in a chair, because normally we can see the chair.
Do we normally consider? Well, just more, I can't see like the back of your chair, but Dom's got such a good memory with this kind of stuff. All right, I can see it.
I'm at a different angle. You can see the light up there.
That's it. Kara's at different angles, and yeah.
If you'd asked Dom, he would say he would have predicted this.
I would not have predicted you standing today.
He was like, Kara's going to be standing. Kara, we've got a lot to talk about in this episode. Since before you've come on, we've just been inducting new Ravens. Would you believe it? We've had three new Ravens in the last week, a couple Sweat Tower collectors, a Varsity member. It's all happening.
Awesome. It's welcome, good. Newbies.
Feel free to drop a Sweat Towel. We've got plenty of people to pick them up and wash them for you. But let's talk about this episode, because there's a lot of threads to unweave. And I'm going to go ahead and make a bold statement to start this off.
Oh.
I think this was a pretty good episode.
Oh.
Kara?
I agree.
Oh. Dom.
I think it was pretty good. There's a lot of really good moments in it, and a lot of kind of challenging imagery, shall we say. We'll put that out there at the beginning.
Absolutely, yes. Well, Kara, where do you want to start? Which thread are we unweaving?
Oh, well, do we start at the beginning and talk about Alex and Julian and the tough stuff, and then maybe move into the lighter stuff?
You know what to do, Dom.
Oh gosh, wow, it's so difficult, isn't it, this whole journey that Alex is going on. But yeah, unfortunately, it's incredibly sad, but she just cuts her wrists and she's in a bath, and we get the image from like the camera angle is above the bath looking down, as we see kind of like the blood flowing from her and into the bath water, and it's quite a harrowing image. It's quite shocking, something I wouldn't have expected from One Tree Hill. I think if you'd have asked me let's say like even like four seasons ago or something like that, or maybe less, maybe like one or two, would you see something like this in One Tree Hill? I'd be like, I think they'll go around the topic of it, but you wouldn't actually see it. I was so surprised to actually see, you know, something so kind of deep, I guess, in an episode of One Tree Hill. Considering we've been saying, oh, it's been quite soapy, I think this was like the least soapy episode of the season so far, which is good. which is good. So yes, Simon, I agree with you. It's a good episode. And then we have, so we have kind of have that moment, and you know, she's kind of, I guess, fading away is the best way of describing it. But then she, Julian comes running in, he's bounding in. I thought we were going to have like a really heroic moment. He's just out the water, but he's just holding her, trying to keep her upright, and he definitely does the right thing, you know, gets her the help that she needs. And she ends up in hospital, you know, very quickly, and then she's there for kind of the remainder of the episode. And we also have the moment, I will just cover them very quickly because it happens almost immediately after she's out of there, Alex is out of there, is that Millie is then in the room, sees the blood kind of all over the bath and all over the floor and in the water, and is immediately just distraught by it, and ends up sitting beside the bath, kind of crying her eyes out, because she's had a part to play in it, I guess, or she must feel like she has, because she said some nasty things to Alex, and I don't want to say home truths, but it was kind of things that I guess other people think and have been thinking, and Millie isn't that type of person, but she's kind of let it out, and her position of drug taking and being a full-blown addict in three episodes is means that she's just extra harsh and has affected Alex in such a way that she's decided that she's not worthy of anyone, which is incredibly sad. And Mouth is obviously there to then console Millie as well. So yeah, want to lead into further things from there?
I think that's a good step off point for some conversation. Well done as always, my friend. Thank you. Kara, what did you make of this intro and what everything Dom just put out there?
Yeah, I think it's interesting how One Tree Hill can take, because in the past they've done some really difficult themes, and they seem to do the difficult themes pretty well for a, quote, teen soap opera. And then they have a lot of kind of meaningless things here. And then, so it's like we've gotten to this point where now we're going to cover this really heavy topic. I struggle with whether they handle it well or not. And I'm curious your thoughts on that. As far as, it was interesting to me that they showed different perspectives from a lot of different characters, like how Brooke handled it, how Alex handled it, how Julian handled it, how Millie handled it, you know, because everybody has emotions, different emotions when something like this happens. And some of them, well, everyone's feelings are valid. I'm always curious how people feel. Like, so I've never been suicidal. I've taken a lot of training and counseling in those kinds of situations, but because I've never experienced it, I'm always super sensitive to how people might look at this and feel about how it was handled. So, I don't know. Curious what you guys thought.
I think you put it really well there, that I think it has been handled well. I mean, I think that everybody's experience and interpretation of things is different. So some people might thought some of it's cliche, some people might think, oh yeah, this is exactly how this may feel or how they have felt before in their own past. I will say that I can't remember what happened next with what I'm about to say, so this isn't like me trying to like throw Dom off or whatever. This is just me being genuine. I actually can't remember how they handle it, but how Brooke handled it is something that, you know, I've heard people say before, oh, it's so selfish, it's so this, it's so that. And I mean, really, it doesn't take much from people that know in a 2024 perspective that anybody that's feeling that way, it's not about anybody else. It's about that they're mm-hmm. suffering so much that they can't handle or bear being with themselves or in whatever the situation may be, it's like suffering to the fullest degree. And it's a real misunderstanding of mental health. And there's people here in the hospital that don't have a choice. You know, you get to live, you get to have this, that, and the other. And my hope is that that gets brought back up in the coming episodes, mm-hmm. and she has some sort of, Brooke, I'm saying, has some sort of realization of, hey, actually, I don't know what it's like to live as you. And even though I have a perception of who I think you are and how I think you are, et cetera, et cetera, I haven't lived as you or know your experiences for your whole life. And I can't understand you or try to, you know, or I can try to, but I, you know, I don't, and have some more kindness to it. Because if that's just left like that, again, we keep saying it, but I feel like some of the things that Brooke as a character says was written as, this is who we should be in support of, and this should be like, yay, Brooke. And actually a lot of it from today's angle, looking back, is like, no, this is like really toxic behavior. And hey, we're talking about a show with a lot of toxic behavior in the show and sadly behind the scenes. Not saying that Sophia Bushra was part of any of that or anything, and it's not, she's just saying the lines that she's given, right? It's not like her choice. And if they handle it in a certain way, then it can be used as an opportunity of, hey, actually, this isn't a way to think. But also, that might just be my opinion. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of people out there that do think that and think that it's selfish and this, that, and the other. But like you said, Kara, everybody's experience is different. I'm sorry, that was a lot of talking. What do you think, Dom?
In terms of it being handled well, and the subject matter, I actually think it is handled well. But it's handled, but the reactions to it is what's supposed to kind of conjure up these thoughts of, like, who do we side with, right? That's kind of my perception of it. And I guess I'm thinking of that from a 2024 perspective as well, where we have better understanding of like mental health in general. And, you know, I think, you know, we've all kind of worked in positions or know people or you know, possibly been in situations where we've helped someone who's struggling or tried to help someone that's struggling. And I think there's two angles of this kind of moment with Alex, is that Alex is obviously just on the road to recovery, I guess, in the hospital bed. We have Julian's perspective and we have Brooke's perspective and kind of a little bit of Victoria's perspective as well. Victoria's perspective is she's ill. I can't remember what she says, but it's like, we're not going to say it's suicide. We're going to say it's exhaustion, because, you know, that comes across better to the press and the media and stuff. And it's not going to put anything on our brand. And I think for that time, even though it's like kind of getting towards the late 2000s, that it just wasn't it? It's just that these sorts of things weren't really discussed, and it's hidden. It wasn't as, people couldn't be as open with these issues. And Alex is at her lowest point. She's at her lowest point, and she feels like this is the only option. So I feel like there's definitely like the build-up of her getting to that lowest point. So it kind of makes sense. I think that is handled pretty well. We then have...
Dom's just changing his situation. We can't hear you at this moment. We'll just give him a moment to be sorting that out. Are you back?
I'm just not going to use any technology. I can't move. It's just an absolute nightmare.
He's back. Go ahead.
Anyway, Brooke's perspective. Let's go back to there. From Brooke's perspective, she talks about how selfish it is. So she uses examples of, there are people that are begging to live like another year, another hour, another minute, you know, like a day, minute, hour, you know, and she uses that as an example. It's so selfish because you're taking your life away when you kind of, you've got so much and people have so little. And she's not at any point really considering Alex's point of view, because Alex is, to her, is still you know, one, she's an was an employee. Two, she's still kind of the enemy because she's kind of she doesn't want her dead, but she doesn't want her near Julian. She still has that, you know, that angle and that perspective that Julian is the one that is being taken away from her because of Alex. And then we have Julian's perspective, which is, I'm going to be caring and supportive. I didn't want to leave things the way we left it because I do care about you, but you have to understand that, you know, Brooke is my priority. But, you know, actually I was coming, it's almost like I didn't even listen to your answer message. I was coming to tell you that the film is going to happen and I found you that way. So it's like, he was just going there to tell her, oh yeah, we can, you know, make some money together now because we can make this film. But it wasn't really for, it felt like it wasn't for the right reasons. It's later on when he says, if you do it again, that's it. I'm going to drop you. We're kind of like, I won't talk to you. I won't think about you. I think that is almost harsher than what Brooke's doing in a way, because it's like, this is someone who's clearly got an issue, got problems, and someone that really relies on you. And yeah, they've been throwing themselves at you and they've been declaring they love you and this, that, and the other, but it's all kind of part and parcel of their emotions that they're struggling to control and struggling to understand. And him saying, if you do ever do this again, I say, I'm going to cut you off, I think is almost harsher in a way. Cause it's like, there's no like layer of protection there. Like, if you ever feel like this again, you need to tell me that we're heading that way, or I need to understand the signs, because this can't happen, because we need to protect you. That should be the angle. But yeah, Tara, I've talked a lot now, as well as my.
I kept thinking about the word boundaries when I was thinking about Julian. I feel like he's now taken on, and even before this happened, he's taken on this relationship with Alex that's not balanced, I think, right? So like some of the feelings that Brooke has, I think are very valid in that he does choose Alex over Brooke time and time again. And I wish that in this particular moment, and maybe in 2024, they would have gone this way, but like they talk about therapy for drug addiction and alcohol, but man, she doesn't need to rely on Julian for her support. She needs help. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I wish he had said, like, you're going to get some help and you're going to learn how to deal with these emotions. And then we're going to go make this movie together, because he's now put again all of that onto him. Where yeah. Now he's her whole world. And if something happens, so in that aspect, it's like, yeah, like you said, it's really harsh to be like, I'm done if you do this again, because it's not really his responsibility to make sure that she doesn't do it again. She needs real help from real professional people. And so, because it's going to continue to affect his relationship, right? I don't remember either if it does or not. So I'm not, this isn't a spoiler because I don't remember what happens next. But it seems like if you're going to continue to have that kind of codependent relationship with somebody, it's going to affect all the other relationships around you. And that's not the kind of support that Alex really needs.
I think if Julian had been honest with Brooke the entire way through. So all of those occasions where he said, Brooke, can you come with me because she's playing up and I need to go and deal with her. But, you know, instead of leaving her a trick, go, I need you to come with me to come and sort Alex out because this is happening and I don't really understand what's going on. She's saying something about drugs and I want to go and sort it out. I kind of feel like I can't leave it. So can you come with me? Brooke is the one person who has helped someone through a journey of drug abuse. Mm. Brooke is the one person that is fairly well equipped to be able to help Alex and get Alex in that right position, and later Millie, as you know, as well. But you know, if anyone should understand this, it's Brooke, right? Because you know, Rachel was an absolute mess and got into a right state and broke into her apartment in New York or whatever and trashed it, and you know, it was all sorts of problems and took money from her, and but still kind of gave her that opportunity and got her for rehab. And there's all of that, you know, kind of world that she can be, she has that potential, but is so vicious. So doesn't ever really use that, you know, potential to be that caring, nurturing, kind person, unless she's adopting someone else's baby. She then has to give back.
Well, I think I will just say, when Julian said, you know, if you do this again, then that's it. I do agree with what you're both saying, but I kind of read it as it was just like a hollow gesture or like a hollow thing. You know, like when you're a kid and you missed your curfew or whatever, and well, I don't know if any of this happened to any of you, but my mom would be like, oh, I was worried you were dead, but if you do that again, I will kill you. You know, that kind of thing, where it's like, it's like a loving, it's from a loving perspective. Now, I'm not saying that Julian's saying it in that way, but it's almost like I read it as, you know, if you do this again, yeah, then we're done. But I also thought the point was that if she did it again, then she would be done. Like, as in, like, it would, you know, so that it means nothing. But I also, if it's not meant that way and it's meant the way that you guys are saying it, then I completely agree. And I think you had a really great point, Kara, about it being this codependent relationship. And I think that would have been such a nice way of saying it, of like, hey, I'm going to wait until you're ready and you've had the support, and then let's make this movie together and make it from a position of, you know, from a positive space, and let's make it mean something. And yeah, I think that's really great. I feel like they're misusing Brooke. Like, I feel like they're not, like, I think the reason I feel annoyed about it, and I feel like every week I'm complaining about her, is because I feel like this isn't how the character's meant to be. I feel like I can see how it's supposed to be, and I can see how she is this, like, strong, independent, kind of sassy woman that's, like, really, like, quite quick talking and good at, you know, she always comes through in the end and can act with kindness and all of these other things. And I feel like she's been, like, misused as a character, and they've kind of made her unintentionally antagonistic to modern eyes. And actually, that's not the way. I feel like I wish we could go back, and I mean we as in us three, but the collective Ravens, and go back and be in the writer's room, and we could just point all of this stuff out. We could get, you know, you're trying to solve a murder, detective bits of string on post-it notes and everything, and we could weave this tapestry.
Here's a point to add to that then. Is Victoria making her that villain? So, Victoria was kind of a villain, really, wasn't she? She was not a present mother, wouldn't care, would say things like, you know, you're just selfish, would say things like, well, if you're gonna do that to yourself, that's your problem, kind of thing. She is that person, or certainly was that person. And I know that she's had kind of recent epiphanies and is becoming this wonderful mother that Brooke goes running, crying into her arms, you know, because, you know, for some reason that relationship has completely changed. But it does feel like, you know, the calling the police on Millie and knowing that she's in jail and telling Brooke and saying this has happened, or the dress is missing, and it's Victoria that's pointing all these things out. So is this actually Victoria controlling the narrative in Brooke's mind?
Well, they could have written it like that and made it more obvious. And if that was the point, then that would be great, because then Brooke remains as, you know, the hero in the viewer's minds, and Victoria can be the evil one. And it's like, great. And she can have a redemption later down the line. Good, fine. But yes, I feel like there's too much of, like, okay, also, and I think, remember, love the show, say it every time, but there is, so I've said this before, that some of the lines that are written, that, and they happen in this episode, some were Clay's lines about, was talking about pens. The last time I was speaking with Sarah, I was talking about, and then what he goes on. He goes on to say, sometimes I just don't think we say the things that are in our heart. And da, 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 da. Okay, that sounds like Lucas could have said that in any season previous. We then flip to Julian a little bit later, and he's talking about, oh, I forget what he's saying, but he's saying the same kind of thing. Oh, my mother, she had her light taken away from her, and she's not radiating the same light, and da, 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 da. All great points. Both of the stories are great. Both of the sentiments are great. I love it. It's like classic sort of One Tree Hill style voice writing. Unfortunately, we have to say it, even though he's a complete douchebag, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mark Schwann has a style of writing that obviously we all like. It's hard. It's sad to say, but you do have to separate the art from the artist and say that we obviously, it appeals to people, but I don't think they differentiate enough into the character's actual voice. Mm-hmm. Like, it's too much, like they're just reading the same lines. And yeah, they're different because Julian's voice or the actor's voice is different to, you know, Robert Buckley's voice, but they're not really tying into, connect this to what we know about the character in the past and what we've seen in the previous episodes, like we've said before. And I think some of those little nuances are missing as well. Kara, sorry. We're obviously going off tonight.
I agree. So I feel like, so going back to Brooke, I feel like there's two ways to look at it. The first you just explained, which I think is true. There is something about certain parts of the writing, and right now it's with her, that the phrasing and the way she is given the way to explain things makes her somewhat unlikable. And so there's that part of it. From a deeper part of it, if we think that there is one, there could be. She's also in her own trauma. And so she's reacting to outside things. It's like the concept of if you're not full, you can't spill out under good things onto other people, right? Dealing with yourself before you can deal with others. She's got a lot of her own stuff too, that she's trying to deal with. And then all this stuff is coming at her. And so I don't necessarily think reacting out is right, but I also think that she's warranted in certain situations. And Alex and Julian are a hot point for her, because she does feel betrayed by Julian for the times that he's chosen Alex, and she feels like maybe in this particular instance he finally chose Brooke in that moment, and this was the result from that. And so I can see how in that moment Brooke would feel like it's selfish, because she needed Julian in that moment too. And because he didn't immediately give in to Alex like he has every other time, this was maybe a result. It's complicated, guys.
It's true. They're great points, because obviously as well, yeah, the whole fertility thing I kind of forgotten about for a minute, but that's true. She's just had all of that news. So it's deep. It does go deep.
I also wanted to mention the Victoria part, since Dami brought that up. I actually look at it as that's her way of helping Millie, like calling the police and then being there to bail her out. It was like she could get in a whole lot worse trouble. She could kill herself or someone else if she's driving under the influence. So calling the police kind of got her off the street, but also a wake-up call for her. And then she was there for her because she bailed her out and she tried to give her a direction. And even by telling Brooke what's going on, it's like, I feel like in Victoria's way, this is how she's trying to help Millie get out of that situation.
I think that's such a lovely view to have. But my view is that Victoria's very much on the how is this going to benefit me, and everything that she's doing is controlling the narrative. So it's, I'm gonna call the police on Millie. I've never really liked Millie, but they got on, didn't they, when they were working quite closely together, but there's always been a weirdness about it. The Julian and Alex situation, she's been saying, oh, you know, you don't want them hanging around together. So everything that Victoria has done has pushed Brooke into thinking there's something going on there and it needs to stop. And, you know, rather than going, look, it's Julian, he loves you, he's not going to do anything stupid, she's gone, yeah, that's, you know, that's a dodgy situation. We need to get him away from that because we know what people like Alex are like. They're going to be throwing themselves at him. And he's, because he's a man, he's not going to be able to resist, and so on and so on and so on. So she's controlled that narrative, the whole Millie sort of side of it. And I think it's her way of being able to control Millie as well. Remember when I bailed you out of jail that day and so on and so on. But also, look, Brooke, look what she's like. I've told you not to trust her. I should be the one running the company because of blah, 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 and like all of this happening. So I think all along, she's kind of trying to control the narrative around Brooke's life so that she is the one that Brooke goes running to, because she recognizes she doesn't have that motherly relationship with Brooke. Well, she certainly hasn't, but now she can have it whilst controlling the situation. Enters handsome man at the end, Billington Biggleswade. I can't remember his name, but it was a silly name. And he, you know, we're controlling the narrative again. Oh, your mom could have hired any designer, but we hired the most handsome man that could have been Lucas. You know what I mean?
It was basically like a Ralph Lauren like
model.
Model, yeah.
What was Alexander Coyne.
Oh, there we go. Was he Australian?
Because we needed another Alex.
Yeah.
I don't know what that accent is.
I think he is Australian.
He's like a little bit Australian, I think. Yeah. So there we go.
Well, we've got Miranda. We've got British Miranda. We've got Australian Alexander.
Miranda. I'm in my notes. I wrote down English woman because I couldn't remember her name. Miranda.
Fair. Well, okay. Well, let's just round this section off because, I mean, it is important to talk about and it is in depth, but there are other threads we have to go on. But Dom, there, Julian says, I love you, Brooke. I'm here for you. But also, I'm making this film with Alex. And then at the end, he's telling Alex, and yes, he's giving this kind of low-key threat, whether it's genuine or not, we don't know. But it's up for debate. But there's a little handhold, and Brooke sees it, and it's like, fuck's sake, fuck my life. they didn't ADR that in. They should have. Could you imagine? In a monologue, fuck my life. But Dom, what's the prediction? Where are we going from here?
Well, I saw the hand holders like shaking hands. Was it she like,
oh,
as like, this is the deal. If you try and, you know, commit suicide again, that's it. We're cut off and blah, blah, blah. But we're going to go and make this film. It's going to be successful. Deal? Deal. Shake hands. And that was like a handshake. And it's maybe, you know, when a handshake lingers for a bit too long, and it was that. And Brooke's kind of hovering in the background watching, and it's all a bit weird, a bit voyeuristic. I think it's going to be an incredibly difficult journey. We're going to have all sorts of jealousy issues with new Alex that's arrived through the door, the handsome man that looks exactly like Lucas has wandered in. And Victoria's idea is to thrust these two together. What a wonderful combination they could be as design partners and a couple. Let's bin off Julian with Alex, because there's just way too many problems with that. But I think Julian is going to persist. He's going to come back and it'll all be wonderful and happy. They might even make the film in Tree Hill. You never know. Like they were going to before.
Do you know what I've just realised when you just said it? And maybe I'm just being so dumb that dare I say, the Alexander coin has just dropped, but then they have an Alex each.
That's literally what Kara said about 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, why has this only just gone in? I promise you, I listen really intently. I do. But it's just gone in. The coin, the Alexander coin has just gone in.
Yeah.
It's been a long day.
Yeah.
Okay, Kara, where are we going next?
I think we have to go Dan.
Do you want Dom to do it? Do you want to do it?
Dom does it so well.
Well, I have a. I'm not going to say a request. He knows who runs things here. Dom, I demand you as the colonel to do this synopsis of Dan as Paul Johansson, please.
I think half the time it comes out as Donald Trump, doesn't it? I'll try. I'll do my best. Maybe not do the whole thing.
Just a taste.
And again, Dan's a bad guy. He's the worst. He's such a bad guy. It ends up becoming like that, doesn't it? Okay. So Dan's path in this episode is really one of redemption. Everything he's been doing up until this point is all about fixing his life, and he hates his wife. I'm not going to do it anymore. He hates his wife. And rightly so. We all hate Rachel. She's quite possibly the worst character in One Tree Hill. And the sooner she goes, the better it will be. But Dan has the realization that this is wrong. And, you know, he'd been feeling that all along anyway. I think even from the book, when he gives the book away to the homeless guy, and the homeless guy's like sold it for beer or whatever, I think even from then he's like, this isn't about making money for me. This isn't a money-making journey. I did all that when I had the car lot. I did all that when I had my other businesses and when I was hiding bags of money in the ceiling and all sorts, and I had a safe that had cash in it, and I had all these deposits hidden around. I was hiding it under mattresses. All of these things. He's lived that life. This is all about refocusing, giving back to people, and telling people that they need to be honest with themselves. And the more he says that message, the more he needs to do it himself as well. The Jimmy's mom moment last week, and her, one of the most cracking slaps across the face that I've seen in television, was amazing. And really like slapping that realism back into him and be like, stop listening to kind of that noise from Rachel and all of these people and sweeps and all of that crap. Just get into being a normal human being again and be a decent person. And he does it. We're on the show, we're halfway through like recording it or whatever, and he's just like, this is it. This is my last show. This is the last one I'm going to do. I'm going to give everything I have away. It's all going to go to charities and stuff and like other people, because I don't need it. I need to. This is the way I'm going to redeem myself. I'm going to give everything away, and I miss you. Like, I miss you, Big Brother, every day, every second of every day. And it's a little tribute to Jimmy as well. And yeah, just like an unbelievable moment. You know, the Dan of seasons 1, 2, and 3 is long gone by the looks of it. Long, long gone.
And Kara, Dan's getting on a bus, gets a nice moment with Nathan, with Jamie. Oh my gosh, did it bring a little tear to my eye when I wasn't expecting it while I was washing up after dinner when Jamie says, I forgive you, Grandpa Dan. That's all he'd been looking for. And it came from the wide-eyed innocence of a child. And isn't that what's so beautiful about children, is that they don't hold all of that weight? You know, like someone once said to me, this is when I was like training to be a primary school teacher many, many moons ago, that didn't come to fruition, was that one of the amazing things about children is every day is a new day. And they mean that in from like a teaching standpoint, that sometimes you could have like a tough day with a kid, you know, with their behavior or whatever. And then, but the next day is a fresh day. They don't like hold it against you. Like, you can have a conversation and it's forgiven and it's gone. To an extent, doesn't work for every situation. I'm talking about traumatic things and whatever, but I just mean, there's something beautiful about the innocence of a child to say, hey, I forgive you, Grandpa Dan. I really like that moment. What did you think, Kara, of Dan in this?
Yeah, so I'm going to say, first of all, the first time I watched this show back originally, I did not forgive Dan. I definitely, like, I remember, like, there's nothing Dan can do that can make me forgive him. I just had that mindset. I was like, you know, too far gone. I was the Nathan, like, yes, there's nothing. Which made it awkward when I met him in person, but no, no, real Paul Johansson is amazing. He's an awesome person, but boy, he did Dan well, didn't he? So I'm older now. Life has happened. And this time I was like, oh, I get it. He's really changed, right? He's really displaying the symbolism too of like turning off the clock and saying, I'm done with this, and turning off the screen that says forgiveness. Interesting that he says, I don't believe in forgiveness. And then when Jamie hugs him and says, I forgive you, it's like, I wonder if he got that back, that a little bit of that hope, you know, of forgiveness. And two, just to go from the last time we saw Jamie with Dan, when Dan tells him what he did and he says, I don't like you, and he walks away, to get that back, you know, like you said, from a child that can just look at it and be like, I can see the real you in there. And that's the person that I choose to love, is perfect. You know, that's so, keep, yeah, I thought it was really, going. Really good.
I can hear my dog stealing things in the kitchen. Keep going.
Fixed the situation. Oh gosh, it was quite a few weeks ago now, probably even longer, that we were saying Luna was like on the counter and making herself food and all sorts, so who knows what's happening. I think you're right. We'll carry on without him.
Yeah,
I think you're absolutely right with Dan and Jamie in that situation. But do we also get that with Nathan as well a little bit, when Nathan says, thank you for kind of, I'm going to be a bobcat again. Thanks for what you've kind of done for me. There's kind of that moment of, you know, I think we've seen it in all cases of like elite sports people across the world, that there's a pushy parent. There's a parent that will just be relentless and is horrible to them a lot of the time, you know, but gets them to that kind of peak of ability and at the absolute top of the game. And Dan is kind of, it was that parent for Nathan, I guess. So there's like that acknowledgement from Nathan, like, actually without all of that I wouldn't be playing in the NBA, I wouldn't have any of that without you. So it's kind of Nathan finally acknowledging it.
Yeah, I think, like, had the Uncle Keith stuff not happened at all and they grew up, I think their relationship would still be challenged. But I think that at this point and where Nathan is, he can look at all that and be like, yeah, I understand. I understand why you pushed me and what you were trying to do, whether you did it the right way or not. So, yeah, I think that was represented there. I'm not sure to the extent that Jamie can forgive, though.
Yeah, he's not he hasn't got the kind of wisdom Jamie has as well, to be fair. So. what was Luna stealing, sure. Simon?
We had some corn on the cob at dinner, and you know, you like wrap it in tin foil with butter and whatever, so she'd managed to get the tin foil off of the counter. But she's so clever, like she manages to really stretch on her like back legs and get up there, so I was like, I respect it, but
yeah.
You know, it's more that I just don't want her to get sick, like I don't want her to eat something that will make her sick. But she can, you know, forage, is that the word? Yeah, all she likes really. Yes, forgiveness is so, the whole show really, here she is again, she's just coming in the door now. There she is. Yeah, forgiveness is, and making mistakes and learning from them and evolving is basically the bread and butter of One Tree Hill. Mm-hmm. It's more that his mistake was so colossal, but I'm someone that truly, and it's just my perspective, but who truly thinks that if you can't forgive, that there is nothing, we can't do anything in this world, like, because everybody does things big or small, And it literally is the only way to create peace. And forgiveness is not necessarily even for the other person. It's for yourself. I heard someone say that forgiveness is an inside job, in that you do it for you. So you're letting go. And forgiving doesn't mean approving either. You can forgive someone, it doesn't approve of what they did, but it says that, hey, I'm letting go of this now, so we can move, so I can move forward, or they can move forward, or whatever. And so I think that One Tree Hill handles it quite well. And I think Dan's speech of, like, there is no forgiveness, it's just what you've done and how you pay for it, was kind of like his cynicalness coming out. And then it was like seeing Jamie kind of thaw that back out of him. I thought it was really well handled. Really well handled. But Dom, what's your prediction? Like, Rachel's been left with nothing and Dan's on a bus.
Yeah, well, hopefully that divorce goes through. I can't help but feel that Rachel's going to linger thinking there's secret money somewhere and she's going to be looking for it. Or she's going to try and blackmail him about the heart situation. So we haven't seen the last of her, but it's good that she's kind of getting those just desserts, I guess. One thing I must say is American buses look fantastic, don't they? We see them in TV shows all the time. And those of you that are from there, like those kind of coach buses, I mean, like, he's traveling cross state lines, you know, in this coach thing. We don't have anything like that, do we? We've got mega bus and that's about it. Do you know what I mean? It's just a big blue coach.
Yeah. Or Golden Boy.
Yeah, Golden Boy, yeah. They're from Harlow. There you go. I used to work with a woman that her husband run Golden Boy. There you go. Insider knowledge there for you.
I like riding your guys' buses way better than I like riding the Greyhound buses here. I'll just say that.
Fair enough. They look good, though. Nice. They look good.
Had some pretty terrible experiences on U.S. Greyhound buses, which I think is what that was.
Stay away.
So I had great experiences over there in the U.K., so that's my perspective.
That's good to hear, at least.
That's to show the grass is just always greener, isn't it?
Dan is going to go away, but I think he'll come back, obviously. I think Dan is definitely a niner in my eyes. He's got to be. Otherwise, what are we watching it for? So go away. The divorce will go through, maybe, and he'll come back. I still think there's potential for him to connect with Jamie in a "I'll come and look after you" in a capacity. Like, Nathan's doing a lot of basketball and traveling a bit. Mum's on the road on a tour. Jamie's a bit homesick, you know. Could take him, because we can't have those three major characters just suddenly disappear on this tour and follow them around, because then it's One Tree Hill, or it becomes United States Tree Hill. It just becomes complicated, doesn't it? It's like every city Tree Hill, because she's going around the country. So I almost feel like, unless there's a jump, oh my god, is there going to be a jump? If there's another jump, I'm going to absolutely rage.
He's saying so angry.
There's going to be another jump, isn't there? There's going to suddenly be a time 8 months later, or however long her tour was for, the NBA season's over, taking the dust covers off the sofas and they're back home.
So even like an 8 month jump is going to annoy you, because normally there's a little bit of a jump between seasons, like even if it's like just
we're only just at the midway point, aren't we?
Yes.
So we're going to have a mid-season jump, time jump. Mouth and Skills are going to go to LA and either be successful or not in that time period, and we're just going to find out when we reappear. I'm not sure I'm happy about the potential of this.
Well, you've signed a contract. You're doing nine seasons, so
I think Dan will be back anyway, is what I'm saying. I don't think that he's ever going to be out of it. Like we said, Nathan's never going to forgive him, so he's never going to want him around, but I think there's potential for him to still kind of look after Jamie and be part of his life. So
okay, we will find out. We will see. Kara, where are we going? We got cocaine, We got California trips, and we've got we've got NBA transfers.
Oh, there's so much. I have to do Clay and Quinn because I don't want to get to the end and not talk about them.
Absolutely. Well, do you want to do this one, Kara? You want to throw it back to Dom? How do you want to do this?
I'm going to give it to Dom. Here's the thing. I'm terrified that if I do a recap, I'm going to say things that didn't happen in the episode. And I'm just like super terrified of that. So I'm like, nope, we're gonna let you talk about what you've seen and go from there.
That's smart.
I raised my hand a lot of years ago and said I wouldn't spoil anything.
That's true. That's the safe way to go.
That's it. That pledge is watertight as well. So, right. Okay. So Clay throwing blackberries into swimming pools, thinking that's the resolution right there. I just throw it into a swimming pool. He's got a whole ocean over there, but he throws it into a swimming pool. And we know that Quinn has gone to see his old assistant or his previous assistant from his previous job and asks for some information. And she says, this guy's mom is sick. And that information is important to Clay because it means that there's potential for trading and movement. It means that this person will want to move closer to home. And it means that a gap will open up in the team that he belonged to, which I cannot remember. So I do apologize.
Sacramento Kings.
There we go. So this is Clay's in. This is my opportunity to win them back. And I think I had said that he would eventually come in and save the day. I thought there might have been a little temptation to go to Barcelona. And then as we're signing the paperwork, or we're about to sign the paperwork, he comes in, and that's pretty much kind of what happened on this episode. So I think I wasn't too far off, you know, correct me if I'm blowing my own trumpet a bit too much there. But they obviously go on this long journey. He needs to get in to talk to the GM of the Bobcats at this point. The only way that he's going to get in is if Quinn is dressed scantily like a cheerleader or trying out to be a cheerleader. I didn't realize if you go to try out to be a cheerleader for a team, they give you a little outfit because they were all in the same little outfit. Wouldn't you normally go in your own stuff to try out in?
Not at the Bobcats, no. Dom. They have sweat towel collectors. That's where we got that from.
That's it. We want you in the hot pants that are this big. And they're not big at all. And we want you in the top that's this big, that's not big at all. And dancing away. So she's doing that. She did okay up until the point that the other person stopped doing their little routine. And then she just looked ridiculous. But it kind of sealed Quinn's, Clay's love for Quinn in that moment. But also meant that he could seal the deal with the Nathan transfer. So he then walks in the hero, doesn't he? At the big signing moment before they have to go to bullshit Barcelona, as Jamie would say, and stops the $7 million deal for a $15 million deal.
And we were saying on the watch along, like, what is Clay's percentage of this? Because say it's 5%, right? I'm just guessing. Then 5% of 15 million is what? A lot. I don't know. I think Dom's doing the calculations. Some people listening did it in their head.
You said it the other day. 750 grand.
Oh, yes, I did say it the other day. Yeah. I should have known. I can't remember nothing, Dom. Is this not... Well, we've spoken about my memory. I didn't remember Kara made the Alex point. I can't remember nothing. My memory is slipping down the plug.
Because we said if he took 10%, he's walking away with 1.5 million right there.
Right, but the other big point is he made two transfers because he transferred Joe Turner, was it? The other guy also. Mm-hmm. So potentially, say if he's got the same deal like for like, then he's walking away with either 1.5 or 3 million.
I think 1.5 is the likely option, but
all right, 1.5 for what? For going on one road trip and potentially, like,
what's the tax on that? Kara, how much tax do you pay? What's the percentage? I'm kidding.
And it's different in every state, so.
Yeah, Reggie, you're to yourself in, like, I think Georgia has a really low tax band, doesn't it? I'm from Georgia. That's where I live. That's where I reside. Give me the money.
But you actually live in Tree Hill, Kara, so he'd be in the same tax stuff, right?
I do, but my company's in Tennessee. I don't know how it works. It's complicated.
But either way, Clay's walking away with a huge check. The thing I would say about, I really like the moment of Quinn doing, like, the dancing, and it's goofy, and I like his line of "sucks for who's next." Like, I really like that humor and that chemistry, and I think they do have, they've developed, like, really good chemistry as, you know, actors and characters and etc. The bit though that felt uncomfortable was that someone shared it in the Discord. Of course, I'm not going to remember who it was. I've just said I've got zero memory. But someone shared it, and it was her. The actress Chantel, who plays Quinn in real life, saying something like, you know, I went through, like, horrible atrocities, you know, on that show, and saying, I think she it was handled really well, and she said quite positively, but, you know, I've managed to find strength from these things, and, you know, so on and so on. Not to say therefore it's okay, but that, you know, she's in an okay place about it. But it's hard to think that, well, this might have been one of those experiences, you know, potentially. So it can make, it's uncomfortable to watch sometimes when you keep that in mind, that there's been this toxic behavior going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, definitely. Sad.
But I do really like the whole Clay thing and Quinn, and I like, and he saves the day, and it is a great moment, and he's going to stay in the NBA, and he even gets, like, the nod from his previous agents, like, okay, fair enough, good job, you know. So, yeah, it is a great, to quote Dan Scott, it's a great redemption for him, isn't it? Do you have anything else to say on it, Kara, before we ask Dom for a prediction?
Let's see. Yeah, I think this storyline for Clay and Quinn is really where we see them kind of come into their own as characters this episode. So I know comments in the past have been that Quinn's character is really kind of hard to watch and cringy and stuff like that. And I felt like this episode, what she offered, overpowered that previous kind of opinion of her, at least in my opinion. I'm a huge Quinn and Clay fan, so I really liked this episode for them. I loved what she did with the cheerleading routine just to kind of get him in the door and do all that. I don't know what was up with the ridiculous her feeding a cow. Did you guys see that? And I'm not sure I saw that the first time I saw the show. I'm like, what is happening? Like, definitely
running away. Like,
like, I'm like, did they randomly, like, this is more likely to happen in the UK, I believe, but, like, wherever they were shooting, a cow came by and they decided to put it into the shot. I don't know, but a lot less likely to happen in the US. But yeah, so I think, like, it's funny, like, they're used for comic relief, but also they have a really strong line of character development here, I thought. Yeah, I like it. I like Clay and Quinn. Here for it.
Clay's definitely opening up more, isn't he? Obviously, he tells the pen situation and so, and Quinn is always very much kind of on his side, I think. They're just on each other's side, aren't they? They're kind of on each other's back. They're kind of willing to support each other from quite early on. So I think that's good. I think there is good kind of development there. And Simon, you mentioned it earlier as well. You said they've got good chemistry and stuff. I think they have. As an acting pair, there is definitely good chemistry between them. They kind of blend quite well. What I would like to know is their ship name. We haven't discussed this for a while, but
Oh, yeah.
are they Quay? Are they Clin? I'm confused.
I don't know. I don't. Do you know,
I
Kara?
don't.
I would like this sealed now.
I think
I think we should
Clin.
decide.
I reckon Clin,
Not
maybe.
Quay. I
Quay.
quite like Quay.
I think it's
Quay.
Clin.
Of
I
course.
think
Beside the side.
it's Clin.
But I will say that I agree, Kara, that I because I remember being on side with Clay and Quinn, but I didn't realize it took this long. But obviously, when you're like binge watching it, you just get there much quicker, don't you? So you don't sit in it for as long. So it feels like not only have they arrived, but also they've been given permission in this episode to be together, or not permission, they kind of claimed it.
They
You know,
took it, yeah.
my third condition is I'm gonna fall madly and insanely in love with Quinn. Is that what you said? Madly, insanely, deeply. Madly, deeply, Savage Garden.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Yeah,
So Dom, what's the prediction
completely
on?
and insanely in love.
There we go.
Well, when you declare that you're going to fall completely and insanely in love with someone, I think that will happen, but I think it's going to come with a lot of difficulties. I think they're not going to be safe from the drama and the evils that Trio has to offer, which will put pressure on their relationship. You know, David is still lurking about somewhere. He's going to reappear, some sort of drunk mess again. But I do think David will reappear and he'll cause some issues. But they might try and resolve things amicably, but there's going to be that tension, so that's going to cause problems. Whether he sticks around or not, I'm not sure. If he does decide to stick around, I can't imagine someone as successful as David is going to stay single for long. So, yeah.
Is David your spirit animal? I'm getting that vibe.
I don't
Do
think
you
so.
want like a Justice for David t-shirt or something?
I feel like he was told that like he was going for promotions and stuff and he was earning a bit more money and he was doing this and doing that.
Oh, we're going back here.
No,
Okay,
but it
go
was
on.
stuff that he wanted to do, right? It's stuff that, you know, it wasn't his dream, but he's achieving something. And I think with Clay, it's kind of like similar. He's kind of doing his job and he's achieving something and he's, you know, maybe it is his dream, I don't know, but it's kind of like, well, he's just kind of following that path and that progression. What's different between him and David? What, you know, and she was bored of David after a little while, so maybe she's going to get bored with Clay after a little while and just be like, you're not the man I fell in love with. You know, you're not neck deep in seawater. You're, you know, I don't find you interesting anymore. You didn't build me a dark room. She's just gonna get super upset. You've got $1.5 million. It's all
Yeah,
his
in an
problem.
afternoon. He got that in an
A
afternoon,
day,
David.
in a day, and I did half the work. I had to cheerlead. You piece of
Yeah.
shit.
Poor David. Just wanted to make a couple independent
That's
films.
it.
Took an office job. We've all been there. It's most people's lives.
So I think there's potential for some David drama, but
Don't leave him
no, no, but
alone,
I mean
Dom.
with
Leave
like Clay
him.
and Quinn wanting to be close together and him coming out, I think like I don't have a problem with David. David isn't the problem.
We know that David's the hero
David
in
isn't the
your
hero of
eyes.
the story. But
There's
yeah,
nothing wrong
it'll
with
be
him.
interesting to see if he does reappear, what that dynamic will be. And if he doesn't, what the problem will be, because they will give them a problem at some point. But they have
Well,
to. It's what they do.
we will see. Speaking of problems, Kara, we've got cocaine and we've got a mess of characters, including Grubbs, Miranda.
God.
We've got tomato throwing. We've got where do you want to go? Well, I think we can probably do them in two sections. So, do you want to go with the Millie or with that?
Let's do Millie.
Well, I'm going to call her Millie Winehouse. She's a bit like, she's a beehive haircut away from being Amy Winehouse, isn't she? Bless her. She's just a full-on addict now, isn't she? She looks at a mirror and she wants to cut a line on it and snort it away. That's all she sees.
I really love it. She mouth said something like, "What do you see when you look at me? What do I see when I look at you, mouth? Is I want to crush you up, snort you." Like, it's like that's where she's at this
Or I
point.
want to use your back as a platform to just do coke off. That's all I'm thinking.
Yes.
So she's obviously very unwell. She's seen her friend that she said some nasty things to go through the
Yes.
trauma at the beginning. And she's struggling with it. And she's kind of told, she's like told by Brooke, you need to get help. You're not my model anymore, but you're my friend. You need help. Get help. And again, someone who's, so kind of well equipped and has helped someone else in this situation isn't kind of jumping to her aid. It's kind of left with her to kind of make that choice, and it's left with mouth. And she decides to go to rehab. I believe it's a rehab facility. I'm not sure where it is, but they're in this rehab facility. And as soon as Mouth leaves, I assume he's going to LA with Skills because they're in the, we see them together, like setting off together. She escapes out the window and down the fire escape. Just as Grubbs sings the words fire escape, she's going down the fire escape. So that's kind of it for her, really, isn't it? There's not really much other than that.
It was an emotional moment when Mouth is hugging her and says, "I'll always be here for you, sweet girl." Okay, Dom didn't like the sweet girl bit. I knew he wouldn't. I've called Dom sweet girl many times, and he's never liked it when I've done it. But it's fine.
I never liked it
But
because you've been whispering it so close in my ear, and it's just weird.
I'll always be here for you, sweet girl. But it's the. I still felt it though, not the line necessarily, but more that they're having to break up because of this problem. Like, this wouldn't have happened without this issue, and it's sad. And also, they've also had their issues. He was, texting or doing whatever with Gigi. And then she slept with Owen, and they've had this whole thing, and they managed to get over it all and be in a good place, and it was good, and everything's good. And then this has happened. It's just sad. I was rooting for them as a couple. What did you think, Kara?
So I looked at my notes and it said drug addiction, Mouth Millie with no other comments. I was like, okay. Yeah, I don't love this storyline. I know it's another issue and it's another drama and it's things people go through, but it just seems so out of character for Millie. And I just like, I'm not really sure what to make of it. Because, like, for her to turn her back on Brooke and all that, they've had such a strong relationship. And then I keep wondering, where is everybody's parents? It's like, don't they have any? Do they have? I know some people don't have anybody to rely on, but do they have anybody? Alex? Millie? Like, they don't have anybody in their life other than the people they met in Tree Hill. To help them. It's sad. I like Mouth and Millie too, so it is sad.
Well, Dom, any predictions?
Well, if there is a time jump, then Mouth and Skills possibly coming back from LA to go, this is how wonderful it was. This is what's happened. Like, Skills is doing really well. I'm doing my podcast. It's all wonderful stuff. And Millie's kind of you know, sneaking in and out, and maybe she makes a friend in there, like in the rehab center, and the friend is like, oh, I know you've been sneaking out, I've been doing the same, but actually I want to get on the straight and narrow, and tries to help her get back to it. Or maybe Brooke does kick into gear, you never know, Victoria might be the one that catches her because she's everywhere, and kind of gets Millie to see sense. I think that might take a little bit longer, but will hopefully eventually happen. But I can't help but feel like David and Mouth would have a great little Lonely Hearts group, wouldn't they, in Tree Hill, just together, those two. And what's her name?
What's the teacher's name
that Skills has just dumped?
Miss Lauren, who it would have just been nice to have been asked. Just, oh, shit, do you want to come?
Yeah. I don't want to be an afterthought. For that, she should get with Mouth. Just be like, fuck you. I'm going to like, but he's going as well. If Mouth doesn't go, that would almost be like a good little pairing. But if he's going with him, and then we've got this time jump, which I'm predicting, then Ralph is obviously going to have been in LA with Skills. So it would be interesting to see if we ever see her again, because I'm not actually sure. She's quite a minor character, so I don't know if she's... I guess that's her being signed off.
I would like to just point out, and just for the record, that Skills's moustache is pathetic. Like, that is the most pathetic moustache I've ever seen, ever. It's like, just blink and you'd miss it. What is the point of it? What is the point of it? Get that off your face. No wonder Miss Orange, where I don't want to be asked. Just get that thing away from me. Just go to the West Coast. I don't want to see it. But, okay. Well, then, the final part of this, then, is... Jamie breaking the fourth wall into the camera, Grubbs, Grubbs can't get Miranda's drink right. I don't know what I'm going to do. Why don't I do a piano ballad? Which did sound a bit Jim Steinman-y. I said it on the watch along, like the intro of a Meatloaf epic ballad coming in. But no, it's Grubbs. He can sing. Let's start with that. Dom, Grubbs can sing and play piano.
Very unexpected. Is he a singer in real life? Is he a person? Is this?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
He's like a Kate Vogel, but her character's name is...
Mia?
What is it? Mia. It's like Mia, who's like, you know, a real musician in real life. I knew the actress's name. It's pretty good.
Oh, dear. Bless you. Bless your little heart. Well, I was shocked. Grubbs is just like absolutely cracking on the piano, isn't he? I did not expect that at all. I thought it was completely out of the blue and out of nowhere to have the bartender suddenly, you know, this incredible talent that Miranda's got, this strange stare, glint in her eye, hasn't she? I don't know whether she's thinking, oh, there's, you know, or I find him attractive because all of these other people seem to randomly, or if she's thinking, oh, this is someone we could add to the record label and he's already works here, so that's handy. But it was interesting that he got the drink wrong, just sort of turned up, just assumed champagne's the one, and he's, you know, got Jamie's right, you want a cold, nice cold beer. I suppose that's not a bad moment at the bar. I didn't particularly think it was that great, but it was a not bad moment, I guess, of him picking the drinks and him saying, oh, you're 20, 24, right? Or, to Jamie, and his birthday was like June sometime, and just recently... and his drink of choice was beer, but root beer with two cherries and whiskey for your roommate. So it was a good moment. It was all right. And obviously going to Spain is Caca del Toro, which we don't want to do. That's kind of it.
Is it, Dom?
I mean, yeah.
He can't say that. You'd never say that to your dad, would you?
Yeah.
What would your dad say if you said that?
It'll be like, whatever. Just ignore me, I suppose.
I thought they were nice moments in the bar. I liked it. I didn't. I mean, I do understand, but the random let's throw fruit and not fruit tomatoes at each other. I get that it was meant to be like some sort of Spanish themed thing, but it was just like, this just seems like an excuse to throw things at your child.
There's a festival in Spain, like somewhere in northern Spain, where there's like a tomato festival, and they just throw tomatoes at each other for the day.
Yeah, that's fun. I mean, I get it. I think that's cool. Yeah. But I just mean, like, it was kind of just, let's have a slow-mo montage of throwing things at kids. And that's fun. I get it.
Mm.
It's kind of like the white men can't jump thing in the last episode. And, you know, it's sort of bringing the lightness to it.
Yeah.
No chase in this episode, I just realized.
Makes it even better.
Yeah. What do you think of Miranda, Kara? And now that you were in the UK for a substantial amount of time, you realize that she is not a good representative. Like, British people aren't like this. This is not true.
Yeah, not anybody I met anyway. I'm not a big Miranda fan. I'm not really sure what she adds, if anything. Maybe they needed to fill a hole so Haley could do other things. But not my favorite character. And no, doesn't represent anybody I met in the UK. So.
Can I?
She is very symmetrical, though.
I would just like to say that the similarities, almost mirroring, between One Tree Hill and The Office is unbelievable. There's parallels. There's definite parallels. The main character that everybody loves ups and leaves with the love of his life and is gone. So we have Michael and whatever, I can't remember her name, Holly Flax.
How dare you?
We have a random English woman who has no real purpose turn up, Nelly, in the office.
Yeah.
And it turns up in season 7 of All as well, and is there till the end. I don't know if what's her face will be, Miranda will be. But let's assume. What else? What are the other parallels? There's other
parallels. Who's the Toby of One Tree Hill? Mouth. Chase. Oh my God, it's Mouth. Oh, Chase.
Chase.
Chase is Toby.
Chase, because he's the one that's like, go away, Chase. We don't talk to you.
When Michael gives him the rock. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Okay, we've done too much on The Office tonight.
There are parallels. Okay.
Okay, well, let's go into our judgments. Anything we've missed, we will hit there. Is that okay? Is there anything anyone else wanted to say about this before we go to judgments?
Nathan and Haley are Pam and Jim.
Do you have anything, Kara?
I don't.
And let's move into judgments. If you enjoyed this episode of the podcast...
And how could you not?
Check us out, ravenshoops.net. Why, Dom? Because basketballs go through.
Oops.
But yet, Kara, they also go through.
Nets.
Ravenshoops.net. That's where you can find the Patreon. Lots of people joining, but there's still gaps on the team. There's always sweat towels to collect from the floor. There's always room in the Hall of Fame, varsity, junior varsity, ultimate Raven. The ultimate Raven. Yeah, there's two packages there. Get involved. We don't know how long we'll do this for. There might be a time one day where Dom and I say, do you know what? We retire from podcasting. And imagine if you think, fuck, I didn't even get to be involved. I'm listening to this in the archives. You could be here in current times. Get involved while you can. Keep them on their toes, Dom. Keep them on their toes. Kara. Who was your favorite performer of this episode?
Chantel was my pick.
The dancing did it? Feeding the cow, was it?
All of it. Excellent actress. Lover.
All of the above. Dom?
I went safe, I think, with my performer choice. I picked Paul Johansson. Just the, again, breaking the fourth wall This is obviously where Jamie gets it from. But looking into that camera and kind of pouring his heart out, I just thought it was really well done. So, PJ, what about you?
I just want to go before you one time, just so it does. I like always in this position. But of course, it's got to be Paul Johansson. He's the Ellen of the show. No, he's just, it was great. Yeah, like all of the same reasons. And just when he's on the screen, I'm happiest. Like, I could watch a show that's just about him. Like, I would watch a spin-off that's just called Dan Scott. Kara, who was your favorite character of the episode?
I went with Dan Scott for character.
Nice.
Dom?
I also went with Dan Scott and Simon.
Well, it's a full house because, of course, I went with Dan Scott, Dan Royal Scott. What about your favorite background performer, Kara?
One line or less.
Oh, my bad.
I picked the cheerleader that Quinn steals her routine from.
Which is exactly what
there you go.
The cheerleader that Quinn steals her routine from.
When Quinn is doing her routine, it flicks to a guy that looks like he's like the janitor or something, and he just starts like dancing along. Yeah, so I'm going to go with that guy.
Excellent.
Kara, what was your favorite line of the episode?
Is line and quote the same thing? Is this quote, is line? Sure. I don't remember.
Yeah.
It's
been a long time.
Quote, line, yeah, go for it.
I went with, I had two from Clay, but the one I'm going to pick is, I was thinking, the ocean's not so immense. Life is immense, and we bravely go into it every day.
Yeah, that's a good one. Dom?
It always makes me a bit nervous when the Raven has picked like a really like poignant good line and I've picked a stupid one, because I often pick the stupid one. But this is also the moment where I wrote English woman because I couldn't remember her name and no one said it in the episode. So this is Miranda's line to Jamie where she says, oh, I don't know about Spain being a bit caca. She's like, I don't know about that. What about all the child labour? Ooh, and the fact they eat children as a delicacy. So I thought that was a good line. I'll go with that. What about you, Simon?
That's a good one. There's loads of sentimental ones, but oh, I'm going to toss it up between either, you know, you could go and play overseas or you could take 15 million from the NBA is a pretty good line. But enough. I think I'll go with Jamie where he said, you know, I forgive you, Grandpa Dan, because that holds so much weight and such a good moment.
Nice.
Kara, what was your favorite song of the episode?
I had trouble narrowing this down, which is unusual because usually I struggle to find one. I had to look these two up. I'm going to go with this one. Until You Won Me Over by someone named Trent Dobbs. Never heard this before, but it's in the second set of Dan's scenes when he's talking to the camera. And that just really stuck out to me. And I had to go look it up. I was like, what is this song? I really like it. So I'm going to go with that one.
Nice.
And Dom?
There was a Noah and the Whale song right at the beginning of the episode, but I didn't pick that because a different song came up. I almost feel like I should let Simon say.
Yeah, for goodness sake. I was like, if he takes this from me, I swear okay, I'm going nice. To do to him what the song title is.
But
because my mama said I could.
That's it, absolutely. Go on then.
I'm going to knock you out, LL Cool J. Okay, good. Ladies love Cool James. Come on.
Mama said knock you out, LL Cool J. Same song choice.
It's like one of the first times I was like, I don't need to look up that song.
Yeah.
Like, I know it. I know
that. You don't
need
to feel the John Nordstrom, you know, soundtrack.
Yeah.
I'll go
or
for
the song at the
song
end.
At the end.
Though, my gosh, I don't know if this is just me noticing or it's always been this way, But in season 7, it's really leaning into there's always a song playing. Mm. Like they play like four whole songs during an episode. It's like, whoa, I know they used to do this to an extent, but it was like maybe a bit at the beginning and one at the end. But now it's like there's always music playing. Mm. Just and last but not least is the precious.
Precious.
Rating. Kara, did you have a number in mind before we started this conversation?
I did.
Did it increase, decrease, or stay the same?
It increased.
Ooh.
Dominico?
Had a number, stayed the same. What about you, Don Simon?
I did have a number, and I actually did, and it has stayed the same.
I'm nervous.
He's turtling. Okay, we'll say it together after three. 1, 2, 3.
8, 10. Ooh.
Whoa. Okay, for clarity, Dom was an 8, I was an 8, and Kara was a 10. So you was at a 9 and you went to 10.
I did.
Wow.
Did we say anything negative about this episode?
Oh, you're going today? In.
Everything about Brooke.
I don't think that was negative.
There is straight, no mucking about. I'm not sure it's a 10. I'm not sure it's a 10. I don't know if I could go to a 10. Simon?
I could go to a 9. I could feel comfortable at a 9. I mean, Kara, I want to go where you want to go because I like you so much. But I also have to have... We've got to keep the integrity of the podcast. We can't just be swayed because you were at the football club. You know?
I think this is the best episode of the season so far, in my opinion.
I mean, that's true. But it's like... So I always say to Dom when we're rating things is you can't do like a like for like from Prison Break to One Tree Hill, right? As an example, it has to be what's the best One Tree Hill episode that we can get? What's the best Prison Break episode we get in that world? And it's just when we've had these episodes like 316, 315, you know, the first half of season 1, you know, lots of these finales and these episodes, that's like, well, that's obviously a 10. That is a straight 10. It's like, we can you compare those ones to this one? Like, is that a fair for fair, like for like? I'm not sure. I mean, but 9, I think we could go to a 9. Dom, talk, please.
Kara, I think you're right. I think so far of season 7, this has been the best episode. There's a lot of unresolved things, but they haven't. It feels like they haven't been left. It feels like there's more to come. There's more to discuss. Some great moments. Dan kind of sticking it to Rachel is awesome as well. But I think there's. I'm just worried about that time jump, to be honest. I'm worried about David.
But that wasn't today. That wasn't this
that
episode.
Wasn't today. That wasn't today. I'm not going to penalize because of what I think might happen. I don't think I can give it a 10. I think there's One Tree Hill episodes out there that are 10s and that are good. I'm not sure this is at the same level as those, but I would be willing to go to 9.
9 would be like the highest we've gone
in this whole
for such a long time. Yeah. Like I will look. It's been a real long time. Like it would be important. Let's see. Okay, so the last time we hit 9 was the season finale of season 6. The last time we had a 10. We had 2 10s back to back, which was season 6, episode 16 and 17.
Wow.
They were the only 10s of season 6. The highest we've gone in season 7 so far is 8. And there's been one, two, there's been two fives, a six, and a couple sevens. So this would be the highest rating we've had this whole season. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a pretty good. It's pretty good.
What do you think, Karen? You thinking nine?
Yeah, I'll go to a nine. Back down to a nine.
It's begrudging. It's begrudging.
Back, isn't it?
Okay, well, we'll put this one in the record books. This one is a nine. Kara, this was great fun. We really enjoyed it. As always, thank you for taking the time, for the insight, for the perspective. Yeah, we look forward to these always.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks.
Great to see you again.
It's even more fun now that I've met you and been to the football club and and all that. So appreciate it. Enjoy you guys.
The fact that you know that Dom and I are the same height for real.
That's right.
You've seen it in person, which, you know, it's perfect. But yeah, thanks so much for joining us, and it's always great to have you on and great to have those discussions with you. And yeah, it's even better doing it with someone that we've met in person. And yeah, just thank you so much. Can't express it enough.
Can't wait to see y'all in Wilmington. Yeah. When you get to the end, because you're not quitting before the end of One Tree Hill, because
I'm not allowed to contract.
I know what town you live in.
You do. You saw drunk Karen at the football club. Yeah. You know, it's But before we get out of here, how is Dom gonna do the Ravens charm?
Oh, I always forget to think about this. Oh, I don't know. How about your favorite character from The Office?
Ooh. Dwight's rights. Dwight shoot. Should do it as Dwight. Do it as Dwight.
Bears. Beats.
Battlestar
Galactica. Do you like The Office, Kara?
I've never watched The Office.
Oh my god, you would love it.
Do you think?
Yeah. Yes. It's a very you show. You'd love it. It's way more sentimental than you would think. Like, not saying that you need sentimental shows, but there's like love stories in it. Like, it's really well balanced. I the first six episodes, I still like them, but people can think are a bit dry. But as soon as you get past that, you just have an amazing show. So yeah, you enjoy. You're welcome. You're welcome in advance. Let's go, Dwight. Let's get it.
I'm Dwight Schrute, lead sales. We'll count to three, and we will say Ravens. One, Cosmos. Two, three, Ravens.
Le Ravens.